You can shop from anywhere doing pretty much anything. You might shop while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast. And however you shop, we all know and love the thrill of the hunt. But do you also know how to get the thrill of the best deals? Because Rakuten shoppers do. With Rakuten, they get the deals they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Sephora, Nike, and even Expedia if you're looking to get some travel in. And getting cash back doesn't mean you have to miss out on sales because those can just be stacked right on top. It's easy to use and based on a simple idea. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back through PayPal or check. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
Hey, it's Mae Whitman, and I play Frankie in the new Realm podcast, The Sisters. The Sisters is about a museum curator of medical oddities who investigates the origins of a mutated skeleton with two layers of bones. Soon, she uncovers an extraordinary mystery that connects her present with one family's tragic past in hauntingly dangerous ways. Listen to The Sisters wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to Muses and Stuff, the podcast that celebrates those who live, love, and breathe rock and roll. From the incredible groupies, girlfriends, and wives who went after what and who they wanted, to the journalists, photographers, and other behind-the-scenes characters who play such an important part in rock and roll history. We are your hosts, Shanti and Lynx. Thanks for listening, and enjoy the show. This episode is brought to you by Electrified Porcupine,
bringing you the best in collectibles, movies, music, wrestling, gaming, and more. Check it out at electrifiedporcupine.com.
Please, yeah.
Okay, so we are here with Sam Roberts
at
the Woodbine Racetrack.
In the trailer.
For the Queen's Plate in the trailer.
Yeah.
In the nice, cool
Just
trailer.
Just to set the tone. But we turned the air conditioning off so that we could hear what's going on.
For the better sound.
So we're going to see, it's going to be interesting to see how the temperature, and who starts sweating first as we go along here.
All right. Okay. So far, I think Blake is sweating the most. Okay, we're going to start off with some easy questions for you.
Okay.
Before we get into
just to warm up a little
just to
bit.
Warm up into the tough okay. stuff. We always like to start off with, what posters did you have on your wall when you were 12, 13, you know?
I remember it very well.
All right.
I had a huge life-size Michael Jackson poster. Like, I mean, it might have even been larger than life-size. And a Boy George.
Michael Jackson in what era?
The first era of Michael Jackson. Not the Thriller era. Not the Jackson 5,
yeah.
But the Thriller, not even off the wall, like... Thriller era Michael Jackson.
Gotcha.
And then Boy George, the Karma Chameleon incarnation of Boy George.
That's amazing.
We had this sort of elderly lady who used to come and watch us when she was very, very old-fashioned. And she thought, you know, every single time she saw that poster of Boy George, she was like, this is an abomination.
Oh,
and we're like, this is, you know, we're like, get with the times, Jean.
Oh.
That was her name.
Wow. Get with the times, Jane.
That could be a song title, I think.
Yeah.
That's actually... Yeah.
Reach back. Remember those feelings.
Inspiration.
I heard you're a big hockey fan.
I am, yeah.
Were you a hockey player yourself?
I was, and I still am. I still play Tuesday nights. But it's, you know, kind of diminishing returns. You don't get better, apparently, as you get older. You hit a peak somewhere around, like, 22, and then from that point on. But, no, I'm still very much a big fan. And
what level did you play?
I played sort of intercity in Montreal, which felt like the NHL at the time. But I stopped growing when I was about 15, you know, so I could...
I hear you.
I I realized quickly that my skills were not going to take me all the way, and certainly my size wasn't either. So
well,
I switched my attentions to rock
on.
And roll. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. It was your plan B.
Yeah. No. Yeah. It was. Rock and roll can't be a plan B. It kind of has to, like trying to make it to the NHL. There are a lot of parallels. You kind of have to throw all of your eggs in one basket, and it's not like you just sort of dabble in it a little bit on the side and hope that something good happens. It's one of those things where you have to, not to get too serious right away, you know, but it's one of those things where you really do have to focus on it a lot in order for it.
Kind of adventure.
Yeah, exactly. There's no real half measures when it comes to this. So.
Who's your favorite Beatle?
Songwriting wise, John Lennon, vibe wise, George Harrison.
Cool.
That's not, I didn't answer your question properly because you asked me my favorite, but there's, you know, you kind of have to divide that.
It's hard to choose just one. They are all special in their own way.
Yeah, and I watched the Paul McCartney Carpool Karaoke. Have you
oh,
seen
yeah,
that?
Yeah.
The other day. And it's just one of those things that, you know, kind of comes on the radar. And I was like, man, he's a very special guy too. And the fact that he's lived as long as he has and still gets to go out there and make that kind of impact on people is pretty special,
really
to see how people react to him and what he does.
Music it keeps going even, you know, 40, 50 years later. The emotion's still there for sure.
And the young kids too, you know, that's the thing about the Beatles. Like, by the way, I like to hijack every question onto like a full-on side tangent. So, but yeah. Just seeing how young kids still react to the Beatles music. My own kids, there's just something about it. There's magic in it, you know. And
so you grew up in Montreal.
Yeah.
Are you bilingual?
I am.
Do you ever write in French or perform French music?
I have a couple of times. Look, we got Blake's bringing in the beer now. The rider, he's like, and you're gonna be going back and forth to that door quite a few times because we usually have an. Sort of hefty beer quota for the
he's in his natural habitat.
Okay, great.
That's normal for him.
But sorry, getting back to your question, yes, I have written in French a few times. I actually really enjoy it, and now with Google Translate, it makes it even easier. Because it's
Jolie.
Yeah, on our first record, we had a song that was half and half.
I really like that one.
But I you know, it's. I'm less comfortable writing in French than I am speaking it. So, you know, to come up with kind of musical words, musical sounding, although French is a very musical language that way, but, you know, I always lean sort of instantly to or automatically to English, but whenever I do sing in French, I find it really, really satisfying. So I'd like to, I always mean to try it more. Actually, we did a French version of one of our songs called Shapeshifters on a record two albums ago. And it was really fun to sing. And it kind of changes the way you feel about the song, too, to sing it in a different language. I'd like to do, you know, like Japanese versions of our songs and things like that. I think I always thought that would get a real kick out of doing something like that. So,
yeah, that's awesome. Okay, so now for the tough stuff.
Uh-oh. No. The easy stuff didn't last very long. That was like two questions of easy, and now we're... All right.
Just going to jump right in, right? So for our podcast, we normally interview and talk about women who have made a significant impact on rock and roll, but usually didn't get the credit that they deserved. Mm-hmm. So the muse, the groupie, the wife, the mother, the sister. And actually, when we were setting this up, we met... spoke to an awesome woman named Valerie.
Mm-hmm.
And she kind of helped us set this up. And I said to her at the end, like, you're usually the kind of people that we go after to ask you about your job in the music industry to kind of show kids and young girls, like, what else that they can do in the music industry. But when we really, really love a band, we ask to interview them. So thank you so much for doing
this. It's a pleasure.
So this question is, in terms of supporting and celebrating women, can you talk about any woman or women in your life, you know, mother, partner, sister, grandma, who has made a significant impact on your success?
I mean, I don't want to sort of downplay the role that my wife has played or my parents, my supportive parents, my mother. But there are a few people who actually have worked in the music business who literally gave us our start. So if I can quickly acknowledge my wife Jen and my mom, I'd like to sort of focus it, you know, attention onto somebody in particular named Linda Bush. And Linda was working in for Universal Publishing. So we didn't have a record deal. We'd been an independent band for a long time, and as we sort of talked about before, getting your start in getting your foot in the door is the hardest thing, because yeah. You have to have a champion. You have to have somebody who is willing to who sees something of value in what you do and is also willing to risk their
fight for you
to risk their neck, to risk their job, yeah. to risk their reputation on you. And that takes somebody with not just vision, but also somebody who's courageous and tough. Mm-hmm. And Linda is all of those things. And she was the person who, really
championed you.
Championed us up at the beginning, got us signed to a publishing deal, which meant that we had a little bit of money coming in for the songs that we were writing. We were still an independent band. We weren't signed to a label. Mm-hmm. But through Linda's help, we were able to kind of focus on playing yeah. and touring and making records, and that was how we sort of, I think, built the foundation of, you know, what we're still able to do to this
amazing.
Day. So we kind of owe it all to Linda.
Linda sounds amazing.
She is. She's still a very dear friend, and thanks, Linda.
Cool. So most artists create and then get to move on, but musicians have a really unique experience of playing songs from their entire catalog mm-hmm. throughout their career. What's it like to play songs that you wrote as a 20-something, and has your relationship to that work shifted?
I mean, for sure, you kind of look at it both ways. So if you write a song, you're 25 years old, 26 years old, and now you're, you know, in my case, 30. No, I'm just kidding. I'm not 30.
I was going to go with
you know, 4 years. A lot happens in 4 years, man. There's a part of you that says, oh, you know, what were you thinking at the time? Like, that's not how life really works. Yeah. And then there's another part of you that kind of gets to go back and be that person again. And I feel like it's kind of a bit of a tug of war between the two things of having experience and perspective coming with just being alive. But also wanting to go back and to be that person again. So that's kind of what makes it never grow old in terms of having to play the songs mm-hmm. over and over again, because your view of them. Yes, there's that absolute thing of being 26 yeah. that's embedded in the song and the mind and the life and the experience of a 26-year-old. And yet your new perspective is constantly shifting. It's constantly changing. And it breathes new life into the songs. That being said, sometimes you just have to put them to bed for a while, too. It's kind of like plowing the same field over and over again. You know, if you eventually it like, runs out of nutrients, you
yeah,
know?
So it forces you to be, like, really introspective, too. Like, you're constantly going back to these moments if you're writing, you know, from your personal life and kind of reliving them. It's such an interesting thing.
Yeah, right. But it's true in that musicians, I think, in particular, have to sort of re-inhabit these songs over, like, daily, basically. Not just once in a while. It's a daily re-experiencing of something, of a feeling, but also being forced to, in order to keep it alive, also to reimagine it as well. And that, I mean, that musically, just play it a little bit differently. So that you feel a little bit differently when you play it, too. So.
When we were listening to We Were Born in a Flame a lot, we were all still living at home, my brothers and my family and I. And then, you know, years went on, we all moved away. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we had some difficult things happen in our family. And then there was a time when we all came back together and we went to a show recently. And we were listening to some of the songs off of that album. Mm-hmm. And it had a totally different meaning.
Yeah,
well, like, it still meant the same, but it took on a new life again.
And that comes back to, I guess, that perspective that we were talking about doesn't just apply to to the musician or to the person who wrote the song. It also applies to the people who listen to the music, who brought it into their lives in some way, and they, you know, you go off and this thing that meant something to you and your family at a certain time when you're all living under one roof, and then you go off into your own sort of lives, and then you come back together and you realize that, yeah, you feel differently about something, and that's what music is supposed to do. We were talking about the Beatles before. How does a song written in the 1960s still resonate in what year is it? 2008?
Who knows?
I stopped counting after about 2007. I'm like, I don't know, 2000 something.
So speaking of, you know, the music getting to the younger generations, Monday to Friday, I'm a school teacher. So I am around kids a lot. And last week...
I don't know how I have... Just, can we just, an aside for school teachers? I mean, I walk into an elementary school once in a while to go pick up my kids. And the amount of energy... If you could bottle that energy, we could solve every energy... You know, we would need oil or...
Working, yeah.
I'm not talking about child labor, but we just saw I'm just saying, like, a way of making a battery that, like, harnesses that. But I don't know, you know, you have the most patience, and
I do a lot of yoga.
Any profession that I can think of, so hats off to you.
Thank you very much. So I was in a grade 7 class doing some coverage, and they had to each present a song and show the video for something that had a positive message. And then at one point, when none of the kids wanted to go, I was like, I'll go. So I put one of your songs up. Because they were all listening to Ariana Grande, and they, like, there was a Miley Cyrus song, and I was just like, okay, we're going to put on some Sam Roberts band. So I put on... Oh, they also had to pick out similes, metaphors, personification, imagery. So I just played the video, put it up, and then we looked over the lyrics later, and they really seemed to like it. It was hard to choose, though, which song that I wanted to play, because many of your songs have a really deep and profound message, I think, right from the first album throughout the entire catalog. And it was like, you know, Tom Petty said that he never wanted to know where that inspiration came from, just in case it would ever go away. But, like, where does yours come from? Is it a conscious choice to infuse your music with those messages for, like, greater hope for humanity?
I mean, it's not completely unconscious, you know. I mean, when you're writing something, you're aware of, you know, the words are in your head before you write it on the paper. It's not like you just sort of, you know, close your eyes and scribble something down. And I really find that, you know, when I'm forced to think about this kind of thing, because I don't think about it that way. There is something that's, I don't want to call it mystical or in any way. It's just something that, you know, it's something that you do, something that you're born doing in a way too. And in that sense, you don't question it too much. But I really feel like the words themselves are born from the music, that the music is asking for something. So if a song feels sometimes if a song feels angry and you write something, you know, you vent frustration in your own life, frustration about the way the world is moving, and it's quite obvious. Sometimes that you can flip that and have this nice sort of sunny melodic song and yet sing about something that has a sort of a darker, you know, tinge to it. And yeah, the more I write songs, the more I realize that it's the music dictating what the song will be about. The other thing is that it can be completely random. Like, I'll give it a working title to a song, and I've started to become really careful about working titles, because they end up being the title of the song, and they end up being what the song is about. Mm-hmm. And in a weird way, it's kind of an exercise where you listen to what you've just... Because I always write the music first. It's always just... I'll write a whole song and all the parts, and I get really into that, and I have no idea what the singing's going to be like or what it's going to be about. And then you sit back and you listen to that, and you're like, the first thing that comes to mind, it's like, and all of a sudden that's it. That's the working title, and all of a sudden that's what the song's about. So not to take too much of the mystery away, but sometimes it's just the most random, you know, sort of instantaneous reaction to what you hear. You call it something, and then you start to,
just,
you know,
a spark.
It could be a
creation.
Character, it could be, so yeah, it is a spark that way.
That's so cool. So it's been 15 years since your first album came out. I heard that you recorded the latest one at the Tragically Hip studio. You and the band and your music are very much ingrained in Canadian culture. What does being a Canadian artist mean to you? And do you notice a difference when you play in Canada versus other countries?
Well, to you know, in terms of what... It's hard to overstate what being, you know, part of the Canadian music family is, how much support you get from it, how much we sort of really band together as a family. There isn't the sense of competition here. It's actually kind of very closely aligned with, I think, a lot of the things we think of as just being Canadian in general, whether you're musical or not. We really we have a great deal of support and you know, having bands like the Tragically Hip, having bands like Broken Social Scene, Matt Mays, all these people who became our families over the years, who we share the road with, we share the stage with, we share just. Sometimes you just need to talk to somebody who does the same thing that you do. And we have this amazing camaraderie when it comes to that. We also get an amazing amount of support from the government. Mm-hmm. And you can't, you know, downplay that, the role that, how lucky we are, and how American bands, when they find out that we get, you know, factor funding, yeah, for example, how much that's allowed us to keep going. And then there's the obviously the people and the landscape and the things, that just traveling coast to coast over and over again, seeing this amazing, you know, ever-changing landscape in front of you, and how much that informs what you end up writing and how you feel when you write. And, you know, to answer the second part of your question, home is home. When you play at home, it's one thing. Music is one of those things that transcends political boundaries and cultural boundaries as well. So I'm happy to say that if we go and play a show in the U.S., you know, if we play in Spain, last year we were over in Germany and France, it's not that different. People don't respond. They don't have like a weird way in front of, like, the French don't clap differently. You know, I don't know. They could. I'm sure there are places.
Heard people in Sweden are pretty quiet.
Yeah.
Well, we have a minute left, and I really wanted to get this one in. And I know you're talking about like some magic and mystical stuff, and I wanted to get this one in because a mentor of mine just posted something that says, "Full moon in Capricorn seeks to give us clarity by calling forth the elder within us to rise. She invites us to step into our center and meet the teacher within the within that embodies our center point within the karmic wheel of life. We have in every new moment of the present the ability to shift what has been and create a new action within new ripples." But she's been a yogi for like 30 years, and I feel like you get this. Are you a yogi? Do you practice? Do you have shamanic roots? What's going on here?
No, I do not. I should, probably, because I need to. I
can only imagine what you would unlock if.
I have a really good friend who's been into yoga for a long time and keeps telling me it's something that I should get into. I should just start by stretching, I think, would be a good thing.
Yeah.
In general, but. No, but I think that if you write music, for example, or you practice an art of some way, then you're constantly looking inwards and probably a little deeper than most people do.
Mm-hmm.
And you become practiced at that as well.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have layers, everybody has sort of buffers that you set up where you just don't want to go beyond that when you're looking into yourself. For your own protection sometimes, you know, but I think when you write songs, you sort of, you can get through that, at least the first couple of layers, with very little resistance now, just from having practiced it over and over again, to say, okay, I really want to write about something, an idea or a feeling, or, you know, and you kind of get through the noise and the clutter. So I think that anybody who writes music or paints or writes literature can get to that place sooner. Unfortunately, it doesn't make you more flexible physically. So, but I need to.
I'll tell you what yoga YouTube videos to start with.
Okay.
Yeah.
I should do. You know.
Well, thank you so much
it's
for being
been a pleasure.
So
thank
generous
you.
With your time. This is a real dream.
No, thank you.
And we can't wait to see you perform this evening.
Thanks for getting sweaty with us.
Yeah, it's getting. What do we say? It's like a 10 degree swing, maybe 15 degrees right now.
Well, let's go take a sweaty picture outside.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Hello, dear stranger. I'd like to introduce you to something new, or perhaps something very, very old. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine is a horror fantasy medical mystery following the titular monk turned traveling medical investigator. Follow Radolf as he navigates a nightmare world in which viruses are gods and the human race are not their favored children. Steeped in history and an aesthetic that can only be described as a combination of occult academia and laboratory Judaica, the Heresies of Radolf Burntwine have been described as Umberto Eco meets H.P. Lovecraft. For more information, check out the Patreon at thorb.info. But take care, dear stranger, for some truths are best left unknown.